For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
The unsurpassed, profound, and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain it. May I unfold the meaning of the Tathagata's truth. Good morning, Bodhisattvas.
Good morning.
Happy Father's Day. Happy summer solstice, almost. It has been a glorious week in Chicago, these long, warm days. Try to remember to savor these times. We're lucky in Chicago to have a strong comparison, so we appreciate summer when it comes. I addressed you all as bodhisattvas, and we say that almost casually here at Ancient Dragon, but I think it has a serious meaning to be called a bodhisattva, to be a bodhisattva. When we use this term bodhisattva, we're really recognizing that we've made this commitment to sit zazen together, and that sitting in zazen is an experience of awakening. And at the end of every period of zazen, and we'll do it later this morning, we chant these four bodhisattva vows, which are, they're amazing, they're impossible, but they're also inspiring. So I want to just talk a little bit about the ideal of the bodhisattva. I've always loved this ideal. I guess I'm an idealist. So people, if you're not familiar with the term, if you're relatively new to Zen or just don't know this term, it's a compound word. Bodhi means awakening, and sattva, or enlightenment. Sattva is a being, so a bodhisattva is an enlightened being, and being whose essence is awakening. And it might make it seem as if this is the purpose of our zazen, you know, that we're sitting here on our cushions and, doggone it, we are going to have a kapow awakening experience. And I want to talk a little bit more about that later, but first I want to talk about some of the other meanings of the word bodhisattva, some of the other ways the word has been used and can be used, because I think it can help us in our own bodhisattva practice. So in earliest Buddhism, when the concept of rebirth was very central to the worldview, bodhisattva meant the earlier lives of Shakyamuni Buddha, his former lives, the lives in which he prepared to be the Buddha. And there's actually a collection of stories in Pali. These tales are called the Jataka tales. And these are stories about Shakyamuni before his own enlightenment. And in these stories, he appears as many different animals in many different forms. And the stories illustrate his way of learning, or his way of demonstrating these important characteristics of a Buddha, such as generosity, patience, etc. And I have read, and I think it's probably true, that these tales, they're written down now, but they were an oral tradition. They began as an oral tradition, and they are really the basis of such things as Aesop's fables and Chaucer's story in England and Boccaccio in Italy and so forth. Here's an example of one. So in one of these stories, the Buddha was a great sea turtle. And this turtle saved the lives of the shipwrecked, drowning sailors by inviting them on his back. And he took them to safety on his back. And then, because they were starving, he offered his body to them to feed them, which really demonstrates sincere commitment to the bodhisattva ideal. So that's one definition of bodhisattva, these early lives of the Buddha. And then another place to look for definitions of bodhisattva would be in the Mahayana literature of Buddhism. So Mahayana Buddhism emerged around one century before the Common Era, so 100 BCE approximately. And in this strand of Buddhism, which includes Zen, so it includes us, the way we practice, bodhisattva refers to people that are committed to the enlightenment of others, relieving the suffering of others. I think you could say the goal of Mahayana Buddhism is that not to aspire to personal enlightenment, but to free others from suffering. So we do this out of compassion. It puts compassion sort of at the center of Buddhism. And this comes from looking at Shakyamuni's own life and his direct teachings, because his sermons, his talks, it was very clear that he taught his disciples to go out into the world and work for the welfare of others. And that's the way he lived his life, his untiring dedication to teaching and relieving suffering. So I'm comparing this with another way of thinking of practice, which would be summed up in the concept of arhat, which would be for personal liberation. It's interesting because if you read about these arhats, the life of an arhat, only very few people could really do this. This was a life of amazingly intense personal discipline. And it was only for the few people that could do that. And Shakyamuni himself practiced in this way in his when he was a young man. He nearly killed himself, nearly starved himself to death, until he found the middle way between deprivation and indulgence. In the Mahayana view, a bodhisattva life is for the many and not for the few. Everyone is encouraged to work for the enlightenment of all sentient beings. And it's not an elite group of special people who do this special, really hard thing. It's for all of us. We're all invited, encouraged to live our lives in this way. And the way we do this is by practicing the paramitas, which are the perfections, the paramitas. There's a great literature on this. One of the greatest works of Mahayana literature is the Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. I looked for it in our library this morning and I didn't find it. So I don't know, maybe it's there and somebody has it at home and is learning from it, or maybe we should find it and get it in there. Anyway, there are 10 chapters, and it sort of details the practice of the perfections, and these are generosity, moral conduct, renunciation, wisdom, energy, patience, truthfulness, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. So that's the second sort of bodhisattva idea. And then the third way to think about this word bodhisattva is the archetypal mythical beings that Taigen talks about in his Basis of Compassion. So Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, and Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom. And these archetypes, these beings are objects of devotion to many people. We don't consider them deities, but we do have their images in our temple, and we do chant their names during our services, and we revere them, or at least we revere the qualities that they represent. So there are examples. So I'm sure many of you have delved into Faces of Compassion. It's not the kind of book that you just read and then you're done with it. I come back to it frequently for lots of reasons. And there's fine scholarship about these archetypes in here, including giving examples of real people that we know about and people that have lived their lives in the spirit of these archetypes. So, you know, last week he gave a really wonderful talk about Muhammad Ali, who is talked about in this book, someone of our time and in our country. And, you know, in Taigen's view, which I really appreciate and I share, bodhisattvas don't belong to any particular religion or tradition. I mean, these are really for everyone. These are ways for all of us to live, learn by these examples. So I remember the first time I heard the bodhisattva vows, and it's like I was utterly stunned. I actually said, well, I can't say that. Because it just seemed crazy. and for a long time I've thought about, you know, how do I do this? How do we do these vows? And one important way that we do it is, I mean, I feel as if being a good person, I'm choosing my words carefully, is not something innate. It's something that we learn. And an important way that we learn this is by selecting our examples and learning from them. So when Taigen talks about Bob Dylan and Pete Seeger and Muhammad Ali, and we think about, what did those people do? How were their lives? How can I be more like them? Be more like the people that we want to be like? And we each choose our people. We each choose our models based on who we are. I remember when my daughter was very little, she said, oh, Mom, why do we always have to be so good? And, you know, I was like, well, that's not an easy question to answer. I mean, your question, your feeling of what is good is your feeling is what of what is good. In being upright, Reb Anderson talks about, he said, my main motivation in becoming a priest was to be like Suzuki Roshi. So this is who he found as sort of his model of Bhikkhu Bodhisattva, and he studied with him, and we can decide about that. But Suzuki Roshi said, strictly speaking, there are not enlightened people. There is only enlightened activity. And to me, that is very, very helpful. So it's not about me being enlightened or you being enlightened. It's about what we do and how we do it. And that's what we can learn from other people. So I think it's interesting and fun to look for role models that we would like to emulate. So sometimes I do it. It's like my own personal party game. I make the list of top 10 people who ever lived. And, it changes. And so, like, currently on my list would be Emily Dickinson, J.S. Bach, Albert Einstein, Mary Oliver, St. Francis and St. Clair, Albert Schweitzer, Gary Snyder. Your list would be different. I think everybody's list would be idiosyncratic. I tend to put artists and scientists on mine. I tend to have more women than men on mine. But they're not always only people that are famous, like Albert Einstein. I admire people who volunteer. Last week we had a small group of people that went over and worked with Riverbank Neighbors west of here, people that spend their weekends helping the riverbank be healthier and more beautiful and a better place for their community and their children. And a couple of weeks ago I gave a talk at in Hyde Park about a group of people called the Bird Collision Monitors. There are people who rescue birds that crash into tall buildings in the loop during migration because they get confused by the lights and the glass and so forth. And they put a lot of time and effort into saving the lives of 3,000 injured birds every year. So, we each can find our models to emulate wherever our heart takes us. So the other thing I just wanted to say is that, so I put J.S. Bach on my list. That does not mean that when I, that my own personal musical endeavors, that I'm trying to be J.S. Bach because, well, I don't even have to say how ridiculous that is. But it helps me think about the potential for the beauty, the genius, the whatever the right language is to describe something completely sublime that can inform my own sincere efforts in music and helps me to be better as a musician. I just have this. So we don't have to look too far for inspiration. I just wanted to tip our hat, or whatever we tip here, if we don't wear hats, in a zendo, to some of the bodhisattvas in our sangha. These are examples of great generosity and very fine efforts that we can all benefit from noticing and perhaps emulating. Hogetsu, our sewing teacher, opens her heart year after year and her home to anyone who's willing and interested in sewing rakusu or sewing whatever this is called. I can never think of words. Okay, thank you. And she just does it. And because she's made a commitment, and some of us are very difficult, but she's made this commitment, and she does it. Aishin takes care of our kitchen, and she cooks for us during sesshin. Douglas, bless his heart, takes care of an amazing number of housekeeping hassles and troublesome things like toilets that don't work and furnaces that go on the plank, and Angie takes care of Tuesday night meditation and recovery, and Yozan takes care of our Rockefeller group, and Paula takes care of our temple, and David makes sure there's flyers out on the front so that people know about what we're doing. So there's people that take care of the flowers and the candles and so forth, and the list goes on and on. So I think we can find bodhisattvas if we're looking for them. It's so easy to be a person that looks around the world and says, oh, I'm just fed up. There's just too much trouble in the world. There's bad people doing bad things all the time. But it doesn't take too much work to find bodhisattvas right in our own personal life. So I'm just going to end with Reb Anderson. His advice on being a bodhisattva from Being Upright, which is the book that if you sew a rakusu here and take the precepts, this is the book that, oops, wrong book, that Taigen asks you to study, all about the precepts. And Reb is Taigen's teacher, and it's a wonderful book. It's another one I go back to over and over again. He says, you don't have to say anything in particular or do anything in particular to be helpful to people. You become a bodhisattva by wishing for your own happiness as well as the happiness of others, and by opening to your own experience in a loving way. When you love yourself and are kind enough to yourself to be who you really are, you're showing others what they need to do in order to be free. You're showing them what it's like to be present in the middle of suffering. You're right here in the world, just like them. You know about fear and anxiety, but you don't run away. This is the way you join hands with people and walk together through birth and death. So thank you very much. I'd be very interested in any thoughts you have, questions, examples of great bodhisattvas in your life. And thank you. Asian.
Thank you, Gershon. That was a wonderful talk. And the thing that struck me the most was the same thing that struck me in Taigen's talk last week, which is the way that other people, whether they're famous or whether they're just, you know, our colleagues, can offer some encouragement and serve as a source of inspiration in just a simple act. I am often just blown away by, you know, somebody's random kindness, or, you know, a coworker who handles a difficult situation with more grace than I was able to muster, and how that serves as such a wonderful, you know, inspiration and reminder. And I just now happen to remember back when I was in college, you know, 30 plus years ago, there was a homeless person on the main strip of our college, and it was just one guy, and this was back when, you know, this was really notable in a relatively small town, and he was there day after day after day, you know, asking for money, and so he really, you know, kind of became part of the landscape almost. And then one time, I think I had him in a certain place in my mind. And then one time, another guy showed up, and there were two of them, and I saw an encounter where they encountered each other, and the second guy was, you know, kind of trying to get money from people passing by. And the first guy reached into his pocket and gave him some of his.
Wow.
And I was really just so blown away by that. And sometimes those moments, you know, they inspire me, but they also really humble me, because I think about, like, okay, what was going on in me that I wasn't going to do that? And so, you know, I think I love what I took from your talk, which was that we can find Bodhisattva activity anywhere if you just look.
Thank you. I love that story. It's interesting. Sometimes when we think back to memories where we wish we had done something differently, then I say to myself, oh, I must have changed. You know, something changed in me. I was a different person then. I wasn't the person that would have the impulse to do that. And it sounds like you must have changed as well. And now you might have the impulse to be more generous than you did at the time. It's interesting. I do think that one small generous act ends up setting off a sequence sometimes, a sequence in a good way. And of course, probably a not so good act could set up a sequence in the other. Know that our actions have results. If there are no more comments, I think we'll end with the Bodhisattva vows, and then we have a number of important announcements. Thank you all. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to realize it. Beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to end them. Dharma.